On this episode of Mex and Men, even on Bethel, Romano is a pain in Justin's side. Andy loses another mech. Clovis makes a collect call, and the Kellhounds set their eyes on Lestrade, but get reminded that some fights must stay in the family. This is Of Mex and Men, a BattleTech book club. I am Kanan Hill, joined, as usual, by my two good friends, Brent.
It's me, Brent.
And Aaron.
It's me, Aaron.
How we doing, boys?
Well, I'm nowhere near new freedom, so I'm alive.
Well, that's good, because this week we're covering chapters 11, 15 of the book we've been working through.
Warrior Coupe by Michael A. Stackpole.
Let's get into it.
Chapter 11. It is the 9th of April, 3029, and we made it. We're on Bethel. I am very excited because it's time for the Bethel raid. Finally, we've been hearing about this Bethel raid for God so long now that Justin's been looking for the secret project, and he planned this whole raid, and he's been like doing trial and error, going world by world, trying to hunt this down. Finally, we made it. Also, before I begin, I wanted to point out this is the beginning of book two of Warrior Coupe. All right, part two, subtitle Deception. Book one was Truth. Book two, Deception. And the leading quote is, "It is double the pleasure to deceive the deceiver." Huh? So this is our deception era.
So some contrasting themes between these two parts here.
Yes, dude. I love contrasting themes. So check this out. Chapter starts. All right, we're on the dropship with Justin. We're in the mech bay. We get this shot of Justin standing in front of Yen Lo Wang. Once again, we get the cool hero shot. The camera pans up and you got the sick paint. I don't know if he has his, white and red paint job.
That's a good question. I don't know if he would have painted it into some kind of field colors. If I was a betting man, I would say Zhang, he's good at marketing, and he would have kept Yen Lo colors from Solaris on there, though. In hopes that he'd be recognized and it might work to intimidate his enemies.
Or at least make its way to Hans Davian to let him know who did it.
We'll see. I don't remember if it mentions the paint. We'll keep our eye out for it as we go back to the text here. I just thought about that. Basically, what I'm saying is, in my head, it's the iconic paint job. The red sun on the white background. It is Yen Lo Wang. And it's still got the Pontiac autocan. It's just like on Solaris. Remember Solaris? Remember Warrior On Guard? We're back. All right. Oh, I like. So then Alexei runs up. He's here. He's got this sick sneaking suit, right? He's got one of those cool, like, black on black, night vision, gas mask. They have sweet gear. They're in these cool Capellan commando sneaking suits. Oh, and they have like a cool faceplate, right? Like the mirrored faceplate. And Alexei thinks it's cool too, right? This is where he's all like, check it out. Isn't this sick? You know, this mission, he's so hyped about it, right? This is Alexei comes running up and he's like, dude, we're here. We did it. Check it out. Let's go. He's like, check this gear. We're going to be in movies, dude. They're going to make HoloVids. It's funny. He's just kind of really excited about it. Now, Alexei does mention to Justin, though, that everyone's real keyed up. We're all ready to go. We're locked and loaded. Honestly, the guys seem really excited to shoot some people, being commandos and all. And Justin's like, listen, we can't shoot a lot of people. I mean, not the scientists, right? Isn't this the bit where he's like...
Actually, guys, the whole point of this one is to not shoot the people.
Don't shoot them if you can.
Yeah.
Confuse, compel noises.
Yeah, that's basically he's like, make sure they don't get out of hand, all right? Don't go, if I don't say anything, they'll just go in and shoot all the scientists. Yeah. Nobody wants them. So Alexei runs off. Then we get the whole initiation sequence, right? Justin climbs inside the Yen Lo Wang. And of course, we get several paragraphs, like a whole page of just, you know what it is. We get the whole hero mech initiation, Justin plugging himself in, putting the coolant vest on.
Who presents himself to the King of the Nine Hells?
Dude, this is so crazy. He has, okay, so he has a new code word phrase. Remember, it used to be like, this room is too small from the first one. But yeah, it's way more dramatic now.
We've lost some humility.
Yeah, it's so dramatic.
He justed it up.
He got the computer to like pretend he's like Yen Lo Wang, the from Chinese folklore. It's like a, it's so funny. When I got here, I was like, oh, new code phrase. Speaking of humility, though, that's his like programmed response, though. Justin says,
yeah, right,
your humble servant, Justin Xian. And the computer's like, do, 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 do. It's like, voice print pattern match obtained. Proceed with your supplication, it says. And then there's like another, he has like a secondary, vengeance is justice when visited upon the unjust. Grant me the power to dispense just authorization confirmed. So this is what I mean. It's this very edgy
Justin moment here.
Getting in the mech, dude, getting back in the Centurion, plugging your hand in, you know, racking the wrist back and snaking them cables around, plugging them USBs in.
It's probably been a moment.
Yeah, he even has the thought right before starting everything up where he thinks, it's been far too long since I've been in a mech. What I've been doing has been vital to the war effort, but being denied a mech is almost unbearable.
That was this whole thing. Hans was like, I'm going to put you on a desk. And Justin was like, I'd rather die. And then he goes to the Capellan Confederation where he just rides a desk. That's all he's been doing.
That's why he's been so fixated on the Bethel raid. He's like, it's my chance.
Yeah. Yeah, take her out again.
To get away from these crazies and shoot the Pontiac again.
Yeah, he still got it too. He still got the big one, the Pontiac. So, okay, so I like this, right? Justin gets on the radio with the dropship captain and he's asking about the situation. And so turns out Andy took the bait. All right. Unfortunately, oh, yeah, because, of course, don't forget, Andy and the Delta Company are here on Bethel today, right now. Justin and Andy are on the same planet in the same place. However, remember, Justin's a clever man. He's planned for this, a diversionary raid where the 4th Tau Ceti Rangers, they're going to go to this other location. They're going to attack this other location. And then Justin and his team are going to slip in stealthily and insert and take the lab. Because remember, the lab, it's like a secret lab. It's not like, hey, here's the lab. It's just some building. It's hidden in plain sight, I believe. They describe it later. So, unfortunately, Delta Company took the bait. Okay, they have moved all their forces away from the lab, and they're en route to intercept the 4th Tau Ceti Rangers when they make their, like, diversionary maneuver. So, he got them. He watched the tape. Remember, Justin trained Andy, right? He's the one who taught him, like, okay, watch out for this because they're going to hit here, but then try to intercept them. Apparently, the maneuver he's making is all fine, but Justin anticipated this because he knows Andy, right? That's why he's a dangerous opponent. Okay, well, again, Justin reminds the whole team on the radio, listen, guys, we're not here to massacre the scientists, right? This is not a wet mission, he says. I know we practice it. This ain't search and destroy. This is interesting. The Chancellor wants the scientists alive so that are they Davian scientists now? Yes. However, when we inevitably reconquer this world, they will be Capellan scientists again. We're not taking them with us. We are leaving these assets for the Federated Suns. But don't worry, we'll get them back. I don't think you're going to get them back. I'm sorry. It's like, maybe they should shoot the scientists. After I read this, I was like, I don't know about that. That's just so optimistic.
That prompts Ling to ask the question. He's like, why don't we just take him with us? And Justin immediately throws shade at him like, this dude's asking way too many questions.
Way too many questions. Literally one question.
And I was like, that's a very reasonable question. Yeah.
One dude asks a single question. Justin's like, they're getting out of hand.
Well, okay. You know what? I would say in normal circumstances, I would agree with you. But we're talking about Capellans here. Okay. I feel like Capellans, they have the burden of being a citizen on their back. And there's a lot of penalties to getting out of line. So I think it probably is a little unusual that Mr. Ling, Citizen Ling, if you will, is asking too many questions. Even though to us here and now, it might seem, reasonable. But we've already talked about how reason and Capellans don't make the best bedfellows all the time.
I just thought as I was reading it, where they're like, we want them here in case we retake it and we don't want to take them with us because then we'd have to take the whole lab. That's a lot of extra.
Sure.
We don't want to do that. And I was like, but you could just take the scientist hold on to them for a little while and then bring them back to the lab when you retook it. Or at least have them to explain some of the stuff you found. But they're like, nope, just don't kill them. We'll pick them back up when we take this planet back. No worries.
Also, we know Justin might want to leave them for now traitorous reasons, right? Of course, he doesn't want them to exchange hands because, well, he's going back, right? Hopefully. And so he doesn't want to deal too devastating of a blow to this Bethel facility and to the Federated Suns. So it's more than just two sides of the coin here, huh? There's a lot going on.
So that's our briefing. We're going to sneak into this lab. We're going to take the stuff. It's going to be great. We've already drawn off the enemy company. They're going to be tangled up with the Rangers somewhere else. We are going to be free to ransack this laboratory as we please. And so I like this section ends with the dropship like beginning descending into the atmosphere, right? We're almost there. Finalized preparations. This is it, ladies and gentlemen. This is the beginning of the end for Hans Davian. And then it kind of fades out as like the dropship enters atmosphere. All right. And then it immediately kind of does a quick little time skip. It jumps forward a little bit to where Yin Lo Wang has arrived at the facility. He's like walking through the fence. He's broken the perimeter. And Justin is out here with also two ravens and a vindicator. So he's just got a lance with him. But he's got two ravens and a vindicator.
Yeah.
And a centurion. That's pretty cool. Good lance.
It is. It's a pretty strong, compelling lance.
Yeah.
The ravens are, they're pretty fresh. More on those later, though.
Yeah. We'll get some more detail on those shortly. So the facility has been gassed, so hopefully everyone's knocked out. They've been pumping that gas in. This is where Justin takes a moment to reflect on this place, how it's intentionally deceptive, hidden in plain sight, right? It functions like a normal electronics plant. It's not built to attract attention, right? It's just kind of this nondescript building. No one knows that. Only if you knew would you know to look inside here for secret military technologies.
To do this, it doesn't have the security you would expect from a facility that's working on such experimental but important assets by the Federated Suns, right?
Good point.
Its security has to be within reason of what its cover story is. So I think it mentions that there's only a small lance garrisoned nearby and, you know, not even in the immediate vicinity, but in marching distance, if you will.
Right. Exactly. Like the local garrison can't look like they're there to protect this facility, right?
Right.
They can't be too close. Suspicious. So we're here. Yeah. They just stomp straight through the fence. There's like no resistance.
Because again, why would there?
Yeah. So they just march on up to the building. Like, you know, Justin pulls his seatbelt off, pulls a neuro helmet off. What has he got? He grabs his pistol, that holo disc that Candace made for him, one of those face masks, right? He also has a cool black sneaking suit with like the mirrored face mask.
That's a needle pistol, right?
Yeah, this is the one. It has like the purple crystals sticking up the top. You shoot it, right?
Right. There's like a delay and then they explode.
But if you hit with all of them,
yeah,
devastating.
Devastating. The Covenant never stand a chance. No, the needle pistol, actually, somewhat similar concept. It fires these small flechettes using, I believe, high-power gases. And that'll be important here later. Spoilers, somebody uses a needle pistol.
So it's like little bits of metal, not like big old bullets.
Right. Think less Needler from Halo and more the small like shards of metal that the weapons used in Mass Effect.
Dude, I was just about to say that. That I was like, oh, that's kind of like Mass Effect. Sci-fi is really into this. Into like,
yes.
What if instead of bullets, they were like, I don't know. They're always trying to rethink the rifle.
Well, there's good reason. Bullets are dirty and they kind of poop where they eat, if you will. So there's always this hope of improving upon the concept, but it has so many other upsides that even in Battletech, you'll still find conventional firearms. But I digress.
So Justin suits up and, oh, like he just jumps out of the cockpit, right? Or like climbs onto the Centurion and then jumps off onto the roof of the facility. And then we get this whole segment where the whole team just kind of spreads out and they just search the lab, right? They just search the crap out of this place. The gas did work, by the way. Everyone's gone night-night, right? They're all Everyone's taking a nap in here. So they're just free to just ransack this place.
I'm not an expert in chemical warfare by any stretch of the imagination. I did a class on NBC once when I was in the military. And then I think we did like remedial every couple of years or something. But I did wonder, I'm like, man, they would have to like have known all kinds of like how big this facility is and stuff to make sure that they pump in enough gas, depending on the gas, right, to make sure that it just puts them to sleep and it doesn't kill them.
That's a good point.
And I was like, man, they could really flub this one up. Of course they won't, because the story calls for it, but I always think it's interesting.
We'll just assume that they gave it a healthy Capellan dose here.
Yeah. Err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
They said not wet, right?
Yeah.
So we can kill them in other ways.
It was meant to put them to sleep. They weren't really concerned if they ever woke up.
Yeah. So the scientists are alive. Unfortunately, they don't remember any science.
Yeah.
It's not what you want.
Check this out, though. Guess what? They find the Mimers. They do it. They do it. They do it. Someone's like, take a look at this. Justin goes in. We have a thick black bundle of Mimer fibers, 2 meters long. It was anchored at one end to a steel I-beam and attached at the other end to a piston-like spring-loaded tensiometer.
So they were doing testing of some sort.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. A display on the piston reported the tension to be at 4,000 kilos. Justin notices that's a finger flexor. That's the Mimers in the fingers. So, man, you put these things on some legs, they can kick through anything. That's, I mean, this is what he wanted. He was like, they have these super strong Mimers. I heard about these.
Yeah, he reports that that's 4 times the strength of the Mimers in his Centurion.
Oh, and not only that, when Alexei pulls it off the rig, he notices it's really light too. Not only is it really strong, it's really light. So this stuff seems pretty legit. And they capture a bunch of associated documentation. They get all the tests and the plans and stuff. This is perfect.
That's the juicy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do say there is a bit where they're like, they were going to have dudes cut it up for transport. But apparently, it is light enough that some dudes are able to haul this Mimer bundle out of the facility.
They intended to cut it up because they thought it would be heavy. So Justin's like, this is great. You guys grab all the stuff and go. Come on, start carrying it out. Let's get out of here. So everyone leaves the room, all right? And before Justin leaves, he plants that holo disc, right? There was like a container or like a desk with some other holo discs in it. He's like, I'm just going to kind of stick it among these, assuming that Davian will find them, whoever comes to investigate this situation.
Which I did think, I was like, I would maybe be a little more deliberate with this. He has somewhat the right idea to make it somewhat nonchalant so his dudes don't go, is this important? Should we take this?
Yeah. It's just someone's like CD collection. He's like, oh,
right.
We'll just slip it right next to the 3 doors down, you know.
Oh, a classic, yeah. From old Terra. Yeah. 3 doors down.
3 jumps away.
I love classical music.
Yeah.
Well, it is important to remember that earlier it does describe that the holodisc does have the St. Ives crest on it.
It does.
So it is something that does stand out a little bit more than you just kind of popped it on top of the computer there.
Yeah. Yeah, she does have a custom.
See, I missed that.
Design.
My bad. That's risky.
Yeah.
Man.
That's why Justin's like, I can't let anyone see me with this. It's so suspicious. Unfortunately, yeah, so he drops it in this bin with other holo discs, and immediately this jammer squeals in his helmet, and it's like very jarring to him for a moment. And when he comes back to his senses...
Man, I suffer from tinnitus too, bud.
Yeah, high-pitched wail screamed through his skull. This is always happening to Brent. And when he comes to, when he kind of gets his bearings, he realizes Ling has come back and he's holding Justin at gunpoint. Okay.
See, he was suspicious.
Yeah.
But it turns out so was Justin.
Yeah. So we get this cool little standoff. That guy who asked too many questions, he's come back and now he's going to shoot Justin. Of course, we get the, what's the meaning of this, Ling? Ling tells him about, oh, that squeal was the jammer, by the way. He's like, jam the radios. So, you know, no one's going to be able to hear you. Okay, don't try to call for help. I got you. I'm jamming us. It's just me and you. And like he kind of walks over to the hollow discs and he gives a little like, oh, well, what do we have here? You know, a little bit one of these. And he's like holding up the hollow disc. Treason on the part of the Duchess of St. Ives. Interesting. Justin asks him, oh, you're working for Romano, aren't you? And Ling's like, yeah, you know, of course.
You're right away. Justin's like, yep. Yes. Here it is.
Yes. Actually, he says, yes, she wanted to make sure you didn't return from this mission. So really, this is just a little bonus. This guy was just going to shoot Justin. That was his job. Romano told this guy, go on the mission with him, get him alone, and shoot him.
Justin must be thinking in this moment how tough it is to make a plan in Capellan space.
However, Ling is the one who decided he would monologue before killing.
He couldn't help himself.
Yeah.
That's true, yeah, because in the middle of him talking, right, he like, and then he was talking about the disc, and then he like switches his like gun hands, he like switches hands. It's like at this moment, Justin doesn't mess around. As soon as there's like a second of hesitation, he immediately rushes forward. Very risky, right? I think he's like 10 paces from this guy. Right.
He does this with the idea that he understands he's going to get shot, right? There's going to be enough time for this guy to react, but hopefully it won't be enough time to get a lot of ammo into him. And again, it's this needle or pistol, which it's kind of these small flechettes, and he's hoping he can literally kind of tank these.
He's going to tank it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And get to him and do some Justin stuff.
He's like, this person sent by Romano. There's not a lot of chance that this isn't going to end up with me getting shot. So we'll just hope that we get good shots on me here and not lethal ones.
Right.
So Justin rushes. He tries to close the distance. Of course, Ling has the gun up. He fires. Justin does catch some needle. He does get shot as he's running at him. And it's like, oh, and this kind of delays him for a second. You realize, like, he's not going to make it. Ling, you see, he has time enough for a second shot. And he's got a really good shot. Justin's right on him. If he pulls this trigger, point blank, it's over. And, like, right when you see Ling start to pull down on the trigger, we hear a gunshot ring out. And Ling hits the floor. Dead, right?
That's a good point. Something I didn't think about until just now. It makes sense to use the needler because it's quiet, right? It's using this compressed gas to propel these small flechettes. And so even though this fight's been going on, it's been far from like a ruckus.
Yeah.
Now we have a gunshot cutting through all of that.
We have two gunshots cutting through it.
Ah, yes. Thank you, Aaron. Two gunshots.
Yeah. Ling actually does shoot. It says two gunshots. It's just this kind of dramatic moment where like right when Ling pulls the trigger, he gets shot, right? Ling gets needled. His faceplate explodes into 1,000 mirrored splinters. Someone shoots Ling, and then we see the camera pans over. It's Alexei. Alexei has returned. He's here, and he saved Justin. He shot Ling. Alexei shoots Ling at the last moment. Justin got shot. He runs up to Justin. By the way, when he realizes that Justin got shot with the needle pistol, he's like, he thinks it's over for Boss Man. Right? He really does. He's like, hey, bud, I had a really good time being your friend. Right? Because because if you get point blanked with the needle pistol, your organs are shredded, right? It's over. Fortunately, what happened was Justin got close enough to block the muzzle with his hand to prevent like the velocity. He puts his hand up against it. This is what he explains, that he got close enough to put his hand right against the barrel.
Importantly, he explains that it's his robotic hand.
Correct. Yes.
Not his flesh hand there.
Correct.
The one that's less problematic to be shot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huge advantage to having that robot hand. Yeah. He put it right up against the muzzle. Now he did manage to catch some needle. He is kind of messed up, especially from that first shot.
Yeah.
But he'll be all right. He's going to be okay. Really. It's not that bad. So, assassination attempt failed.
Another Romano assassination attempt
failed. Another one. Another Allard, right? Yeah. She can't kill him. These men. Oh, I like this bit. Alexei, like, kind of looks over. He spots the disc. Alexei's eyes, like, you see him, like, look at the disc, and he just kind of looks back at Justin, like, you're the boss, whatever. He doesn't even ask. He's like, hey, I'm not worried about it. He don't care. I like when Justin asks Alexei, why did he come back? Alexei tells him, well, didn't trust Ling.
It's like he asked a question. Can't trust him.
See, I told you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the Capellan way. Yeah. Okay.
I knew when he asked a question, there'd be trouble. Right? I like, Alexei then smashes the jammer, right? He like crushes it with his foot. This is funny. As soon as he destroys the jammer, we realize the radio is like popping off. It's like, come in, come in. Hey, where are you guys at? Hey. And it's like, oh, something's going on, right? I like this like transition here where like immediately this moment is shattered and the radio is going crazy. What's going on? So we got four mechs approaching the facility, two Valkyries, a Jenner, and a Centurion, and they're almost here. So Justin tells Alexei, all right, listen, get everyone out. Grab the guys, grab the stuff, get back on the drop ship, start loading it up. I'll take the mechs. We'll hold them off. All right. I'll see you on the ship. I love this. Before Alexei runs off to go load all the stuff up, he's like, and Justin? Justin's like, yeah. And he points at Ling's body and he says, I'm glad we got that Davian assassin before he got you. And Justin's like, amen to that, bud. I'll see you on the ship. You're like, oh, nice.
It makes you wonder, what did he mean by that?
Oh, yeah. What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
It is a strange thing to say, though, right? Because Alexei would know. If it was a Davian assassin.
It is funny. It's like, this is his last, these are his closing remarks to Justin. Was he points at the guy and he says, that's a Davian assassin. And Justin's like, yeah, it was. You're right. It's like, oh, Alexei, I do feel like they're on some level of communication here. These guys work closely together that, no, I don't think this was said in like just complete ignorance. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Alexei was like kind of constructing a cover story, like improvising a cover story right here. Like, Davian? And Justin's like, Davian. And I'm like, all right, let's get out of here. But I think both of them know that won't know Dave.
Yeah, when I read it, I couldn't tell if in that moment, if Alexei was making a play to try to bury this.
It's
like, oh, maybe that's our spy. Maybe that's maybe the shade can get away from me a little bit. Even though I'm not suspected, maybe I can bury it real conveniently right now.
I also wondered if that was kind of the idea.
And Justin's just like, this makes my paperwork a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine when you fill out those reports where it's like, of course, one of the men on my team was once again an assassin planted by Romano.
Yeah.
Luckily, we have procedures in place for handling this. This is the fourth assassin she has planted among my company.
He's just got a stamp that's like Romano assassin to hit on the paperwork.
Yeah, there's a form. Yeah, they have like a template. Yeah, they've already.
That was my other takeaway from it. Is that would be the other angle of like, oh yeah, we're just going to clean this up in the reports real easy here by both agreeing that this is what happened. We got our cover story.
Also, this is a interesting pairing. We learned the lance composition of Andy's command lance here. It's just two Valkyries, a Jenner, and a Centurion that'll be going up against a Vindicator, two Ravens, and a modified Centurion. It'll be an interesting fight.
That's right. We'll have to see how that fight goes down in the next chapter.
Chapter 12. So this chapter starts from Andy's perspective. We actually jump back in time a little bit to when Andy was offloading most of his company over by the other facility where they will engage with the 4th Tau Ceti Rangers. I like, so the chapter opens with Andy realizing that he's been duped, right? We've been had, Redburn. They had a damn leopard hiding in the Overlord's shadow, right? That was the thing, is that Justin's leopard went in quiet. So they didn't even know it was there until it was too late. They've already moved all their forces over to take care of this distraction. And it turns out that there's this other Capellan ship here that's just going to raid the facility while they're away. He's been duped. He's been had. He got him. I like, Andy's so mad at himself. And he's like, sure, you learned how to, you know, anticipate a landing zone for enemies. Andy, do you remember who taught you that? Justin taught you that, Andy. Come on, Andy. Think, Andy.
And it's in this moment, like, Andy's not giving himself any credit. He's just like, it's so dumb I fell for this. But then he immediately, like, this must be Justin's plan. There's even a chance Justin's on this mission. And it's like, you did piece that together, like, almost instantly. As soon as you got the new information, you were able to, like, adapt a plan here. So we got to give our boy Andy a little credit when he's not giving himself some.
So what I agree with you.
Yeah, he's frustrated. So what are we going to do? Well, we only have four mechs still aboard the Defiant. That's their dropship. Everyone else has disembarked. However, there are four still on board, including Andy and his Centurion. So here's what we're going to do. Crayon, I'm leaving it to you. All right. Defense of this area. Robert Crayon is in command. Isn't that cool? Robert Crayon is in command, functionally in command of Delta Company, while Andy goes to take care of this. So he's like, listen, we're going to stay on the ship. You guys take care of this. I'm going to take me and these three other guys back. We're going to take care of this. He calls the dropship captain. He's like, Captain, take us back. Ride us back. We're going back. And so, yeah, they pull off. Course plotted and locked in. We'll be there in just under 15 minutes. So Andy heads back to the laboratory with one Lance. Now, like as they're heading over there, we get this little section where Andy's kind of thinking to himself, man, there's like an Andy moment where he's just like, what is this? He's like, they must be going for the lab. The lab? How could they possibly know about the lab? Wait a minute. No one knows. Only I know. It's like confidential. He's like, oh no, what am I going to tell the boys? Hold on. I got to make an announcement. Hold on. I better make this good. And this is where he like clicks on his radio and he says some stuff like, guys, there was some press releases about, there's been breakthroughs in miniaturization. And, you know, the Maskrovka must have taken notice, guys. And so the facility. And they're all like, okay, sure. Yeah, like Armand's just like, so what are we looking at, Cap?
I do love that he like goes through that story and everybody just is like, that's fine. It's the same vein of like, yeah, we had a secret op where we were running some reports out of this lab. And we were hoping the Maskrovka would bite it. And you could have just been like, yeah, we got a secret lab over here. And it looks like the Maskrovka checked it down. And the guys would have been like, so what are we looking at, Cap?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny, right? It is. It comes off like a little, yeah. You know what it is? He knows that the ROMs of all of these get reviewed. And if you say the wrong thing, you get in trouble. He was right there.
So he just decided like improv's his best bet.
Cover story. So what are we looking at? Well, I love these like computations they do about like the dropships. They're so good about like, well, the weight and this and that, it's probably these. And they're usually right, which is pretty impressive. So they don't know for sure, but it looks like a Centurion, a Vindicator, and two of those new Ravens they got. What year did the Raven come out? How long has this thing been out? Not that long, right? Because this is like, Memory Core was last year.
The Capellans were desperately seeking any kind of force multiplier after the Third Succession War. They were somewhat successful in recreating the advanced electronic warfare systems of the Lost Star League. But the prototypes were too large for existing battle mechs. Old Maximilian Leal himself directed the creation of this new design to carry these electronics into battle. Interstage Wright, the Hellspont Industries RVN TAC-1X Raven, is a light mech focused on electronic warfare and countermeasure support. The Raven is built around the Series Arm electronic warfare package. This allows the Raven to provide ECM jamming or act as a scout with its somewhat advanced support. It would often be employed as a forward observer for directing artillery fires. However, these early Ravens had some issues, and the EW technology was not quite there yet. If damaged, the EW package would cause disruption of other vital systems, making it a bit of a liability. In addition to the experimental Series Arm Electronic Warfare X-TAC-1 equipment, the Raven 1X is equipped with a Harpoon 6-tube SRM launcher and two Series Arm medium-class lasers. It is powered by an Omni 175 engine, allowing it to reach a slow speed for a light mech of up to 86 kph. The Raven is destined to become a powerful mech, but these early versions are just not as efficient with their equipment and unfortunately lead to the 1X being underwhelming for its time.
Dude, the Raven rules. I've always thought that this is one of the coolest looking mechs. I really do. This was one of the first, okay, look, I've said it before. I played Mech Commander when I was a kid, right? You get that opening cutscene, he's in the Raven. You get the Raven pretty early on. I've always thought this mech was really cool. And I like that you get the ECM. In Mech Commander, the ECM to it, you know, you get like, dude, it was a, I like learned early on that like the Raven is really cool and it looks cool. And I like that it's got like electronic countermeasures. This has always been one of my favorites. It's got a cool name, cool look.
I know this is one of the mechs that I've had on the list. Like, I can't wait to see just because I know how much you love the Raven. Like, we've talked about it so many times that I was like, I can't wait to see it just so Kanan gets his Raven in fiction.
The Raven, it has a special place in my heart because it was my first favorite mech.
Now, you're specifically a fan of the 3L, which is not what we saw here with the 1X, but the 3L is, it's pretty scary. It's a pretty powerful little electronic warfare light mech.
Narcs, dude.
Narcs.
I love the Narcs. I think the Narcs are so cool. I even like the Raven in like the video games. I'm like Mech Warrior. I'll bring the Raven and stuff. It's so cool. And I just like that design. I like that it's like, oh, it's like a bird. You get it. It's got this like beak, this like, you know, it like draws into a point where like the cockpit is. I just think it's like a perfect design. And you know what? I've always liked armless mechs. I got no problem with arms. All right. I love arms. Got two of them myself. Seriously. Plenty of mechs I like have arms. There's some kind of thing where like, yeah, I like noticed a pattern of like a bunch of mechs that I think are just like iconic designs. I'm like, a bunch of these are like armless. I just kind of like that. I don't know why. I think it's cool when it's just like a cockpit on legs with like, I always like this design. The Raven Suite. All of the different versions of it too have been pretty cool, like all the different interpretations and like art styles over the years. I think they're all pretty good.
I've definitely had some fun with Ravens that I've thrown in a couple of my list over time.
If I recall correctly, you were using some Ravens in one of your 350 lists, weren't you?
Yeah, Jen kind of had a Raven in there, and he did some work.
For your Taurian Concordat Pleiadian Hussars.
That's right.
Yeah, he was a son of a gun.
And I loved him for the Narcs, too.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, when you get the stealth armor on it, too, watch out. It's a killer. And I always like the idea of being in this cockpit, but you feel like the Raven has all this advanced stuff, little computers and switches, and like the pilot has to be always worrying about managing the communications and, you know, the like ECM and all that stuff. I just think it's cool that they have like this special job to do. I like to use the Raven on MechWarrior Online. My pilot skill has never gone up, ever, ever. But that doesn't matter because there's a certain team playeriness to like the Raven, right? It's not going to go out and do anything on its own, really. It has to work in tandem with other, you know, it's more of support. I guess this is the word, you know, it has a support role. I love that. I like support roles. And heck yeah, love the Raven. So happy that they're here. A fine Capellan mech. Like Andy even points out when he's talking to the guys, he mentions, hey, watch out. The Raven's got ECM that makes them hard to hit, right? So they're a little slippery. Just giving you a fair warning. Now, okay, but this is where the shocking realization strikes Andy. Andy realizes that the Centurion pilot might be Justin, he considers. And when he thinks about it for just a moment longer, he knows it. He knows it. It's Justin. It has to be. I know it's Justin. He's here. He knows it in his heart. He's right, too. But this is even on his way over, he realizes, I'm about to face Justin. It has to be him. He can feel it.
Yeah, and as soon as he thinks it for a moment, it's Justin. All right. And then he's like, oh, wait, that's real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He gets very anxious because Andy doesn't think he's good enough to beat Justin, right? Justin's so good. Remember the Solaris Championship?
Those guys were assholes, but those guys were also notoriously decent pilots, and Justin killed them all.
Peter Armstrong, notoriously decent. Remember Peter Armstrong. So, yes, Andy thinks Justin's forgotten more about mech warring than I'll ever know. And no more time to brood, however, because we've arrived. We're coming in hot. Get your people ready. Prepare for departure. They've arrived back at the facility. We're on. Here we go. So, Andy's Lance disembarks. Remember, it's Andy and the Centurion, Saint Armand in the Jenner, and we got Deridifort and Bissot, I think. They're in Valkyries, okay? Two Valkyries, a Jenner, and a Centurion. I like Justin's Lance better, personally. It's more to my taste. I'm like, no, I'll take the Vindicator and the two Ravens, actually.
If it's all the same to you, I'll take Andy's Lance. I feel like a lot of work can be done with some pocket Valkyries.
That's true. There's nothing wrong with this. This is quite ineffective. They just don't look as cool.
I think it's a fairly fair fight, honestly. I didn't pull out the calculator and tally out the battle value, but it can't be far off.
Advice at heat.management. So Andy's Lance disembarks. They all jump off. Orders are shoot on sight. All right, people. If it moves, shoot it. All right. We ain't messing around. Let's go. Let's move in. So now I feel like we've gotten kind of back to the present moment where we were when Justin was in the facility, and then we got the alert that four mechs were arriving. Here we are. Now we saw what happened. And he returned to the facility with one lance, and the counterstrike has begun. So we get some mech battle here. We get a battle scene. All right. Don't think that we were getting off Bethel without a mech battle. No way. No way.
This is the first one, right?
Yeah, it's been a minute.
This is our first on-screen mech battle. You know, mech battles have been taking place, but not on screen.
In this book?
Yeah.
Right. Good point.
Yeah, we've had a few descriptions of mech battles, but none actively going on.
Man, masterful pacing. It hits so much harder, right? Like the Bethel raid. God, I've been reading about this for months now. So what happens here? All right. Well, to start, the Valkyries start taking missiles from the Ravens. Right away, the Valkyries get to running, and they immediately start getting hit with missiles. The Ravens are out there shooting missiles. So Andy turns. He slams a Raven with an AC round. Okay, that's cool. That's fun. So
not for the Raven.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Andy smashes a Raven with an auto cannon. Oh, yeah, ripped its right wing off and sent it sailing through the sky. A lot of that in these books, right? Talking about like stuff on mechs getting blown off and flying through the air, right?
Yes, that's true.
He loves it. So the Jenner gets in on it. Remember, there's two Ravens. The Jenner lasers the second Raven, all right, jumps up on him. First Raven lasers the Valkyrie. Okay, laser shot on the Valkyrie. So, of course, the Valkyrie's like, what? Valkyrie's laser back, okay? Okay, all right. Here's what's cool. This is where Andy's like, I ain't messing around anymore. He links the LRMs with the autocannon, right? The, what do they call that, Brent? When you, like, link the weapons together.
This is a tick or target interlock circuit.
Yes, the tick.
Anyone playing a MechWarrior game, you very likely, for ease of shooting, use this because mechs have lots of different weapon systems on them, and it's bad for the pilot to shoot them all at once, usually, because these things generate heat along with moving and everything else. The biomers heating up. Shooting them all at once can be bad for business. So a tick allows you to link different weapon systems together so that you can fire them in intervals. So in this case, Andy's going to unusually link his LRMs with his to his autocannon, which odd move.
Crazy.
Interesting. Yeah.
But hey, if it works, it works.
He's just like, I'm tired of this. He links them all together, points at a Raven, and pulls the trigger. Okay, and to be fair, he destroys this Raven. It hits the ground. He does. And then, one of the Ravens is down, and then, you know, the boys come in. They just finish off the second Raven. They tear it up. So the Ravens are done. They get taken out, by the way.
I'm sorry, Kane. It was not quite the debut.
Like, what are you guys doing, though?
They are the 1Xs, though. These are prototypes. They're not the mass production models.
Yeah, they might need to take these back to the workshop.
Yeah, and you know, they didn't... Oh, you know what's funny? I just thought about this. Justin might have been a moment late trying to remount the Centurion while he was down there. I was like, why aren't the Ravens out in front shooting SRM?
Yeah.
Probably
they're screening.
Because, yeah, they were, Justin was a step behind.
Yeah.
Good point. Right, because those guys were like, they were like the perimeter, right? So, of course, they got through them. It all happened so fast. Really, these Ravens, so sorry. It's very sad. So they're out of here. Andy's lance approaches the factory. The Centurion and the Vindicator are here. They're still here. What are we doing? The idea is, one, Valkyries will take the Vindicator. You guys got the Vindicator. You can take care of it. It's fine. Two, Jenner, you're going to cover the infantry. They like don't want to say it. They're like, Jenner, can you, you know what I'm saying? And he's like, yeah, I got it. It's fine. He don't want to say kill all those guys, but
if you would,
he knows
be
what
so
to
kind.
Do. Yeah, someone's got to take care of the infantry, and of course, Andy will take the Centurion.
It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off.
Here we go.
It's our matchup. We've been waiting for this.
Here we go.
Centurion on Centurion. They're not quite an even match, though. So one definitely has an advantage at long and medium range, and the other is brutally devastating at close range. So Fandy plays it smart and keeps it at range, and Justin doesn't get in on him. He might have a chance, skill differences aside. We'll see if that's what he does, though.
Good point. Will Andy keep his distance? Oh, how's this thing pop off? Oh, like, so yeah, the Jenner moves in on the Vindicator. The Vindicator tries to shoot the Jenner with the PPC, but he does miss, unfortunately.
Bad matchup, the Jenner versus the Vindicator. Yeah. The Vindicator really doesn't have the right tools to tackle a Jenner that's up on
him. That's a tough dice roll, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it didn't work out.
The Valkyrie really is kind of, it wants to be at range. To employ it correctly, I would have said Vindicator, like suppress those Valkyries, right? Which those Valkyries also want to kind of sit back and throw LRM-10s.
That's all they do in this fight, is they're just like, yeah, let's empty out these LRMs, dude. For real.
But this Jenner closes the distance, and it's over before it started for this guy.
Now, like, Andy turns toward the Centurion. Dude, this is where he dials up the old frequency, right? The one him and Justin used to use. And he says, "It's you, isn't it, Justin? It's you." And of course, Justin's still got the old frequency too. I love this. He dials up the old frequency from back on Kittery. "It's you. Run, Andrew. I owe you nothing. You have no hold over me. I slew men with twice your skill on Solaris, Captain. Do you really want to die here and now? You bastard." I like, yeah, so Justin tells Andy to run, and so Andy launches LRMs. That's immediately what he does. He doesn't say anything back. He just shoots missiles at him, and we're off to the races.
I think that's a proper response.
Yeah.
Hey, we can pull it back to Andy's first meeting with the Archon, where he's like, "If I don't know what I'm supposed to do in a social situation, I just start firing."
You beat me to the punch. You're absolutely right. His training takes over, and old Andy starts shooting. It's probably the right move.
This is emotionally difficult for me. Pull the, like, LRMs. Like, he does the missiles, like, hammer Yinlo Wang. It's okay, so check this out. Yeah, Justin, he stumbles back and he smashes into the building behind him. I feel like, you know, dust and smoke rise up all around him, and you're like, did we get him? And when the smoke clears, the Centurion rebounded off the building, dropped to one knee, and steadied itself with the left hand pressed onto the ground. Sick pose. Right? when the dust clears, you just see, like, Yinlo Wang, like, kneeled with, like, hand on the ground. God, it's so cool. It's so sick.
It's definitely our movie pose here.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Haunting laughter. "So the puppy has developed teeth. Very well, Redburn."
Justin just keeps being Justin sometimes here.
Yeah.
He's gone full anime villain in this fight.
He totally has.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It rules. Yeah, he just starts mocking Andy. And he's like, "How could have I ever thought of him as a friend?" And of course, he's like, "I got to close in." And he just starts, like, moving in towards Justin. And now, Brent, this is exactly what you said he shouldn't do, right?
Yes, that is indeed. Andy Centurion, it has a class 10 autocannon. It has two medium lasers, one forward, one aft. And it has an LRM-10, right?
Okay.
The autocannon 10... decent at medium, it can stretch out to the long range, okay? LRM-10, only useful basically at long and medium, at short range. These poor inner sphere Surratt LRMs are not going to make it. They're not going to be as effective. We've seen them used in close proximity before, and they can be done, but they're much less accurate. Now, here's the blunder, though, and I've already read this part, so I know that Andy forgot that Justin has the Pontiac, right?
He's got the Pontiac.
If Andy had realized that, I don't think he would have made this blunder, because the Class 20 autocannon, that is the Pontiac, is much more effective at close range than it is at medium and long range. And Justin, if you recall, he doesn't have LRMs anymore, right? That's correct?
Yeah, he took them out.
So if Andy had realized this, and he probably would have, except that those Ravens were jamming, so he probably wasn't getting targeting data. And depending on the state that the Ravens are left in, they might still be actively jamming. So you can kind of presume that... he really doesn't know, just from, like, all the IFF data that would kick back, you know, what weapon systems the enemy has. He might not be getting. And we know for a fact he forgot. So closing the distance on a mech that he assumes is kind of his mirror, as in they both have the same weapon systems, it doesn't quite make sense, but at least you're taking out what he thinks he'll be removing the LRM-10 from the equation. And then they'll be in kind of a sort of melee in close range. But, well,
No. Andy closes in. Now he pulls up his autocannon. He hammers Yin Lo Wang with an AC round. Justin tanks it.
Ugh.
And he basically is him like a nothing personnel kid. I'm serious. He's like, not bad. But check this out. And Justin, this is where he raises his autocannon up. And this is where I feel like we get this flashback where like you see Andy and then you like he remembers like reading some reports of like Solaris, right? About Justin. Because remember, he was like following the whole thing when he could. He was very busy at the time. But I feel like you like get him in like a hotel room, like watching a HoloVision and it's like, Yin Lo Wang. And he's like, wait a minute. And then when he's like, when Justin raises the cannon up, Andy suddenly remembers, oh no, he's got the Pontiac, dude. No. And Justin pulls the trigger and Andy's Centurion gets hammered, absolutely obliterated. This thing gets shredded, dude. He hits the dirt. It's over. He gets crushed. One shot from the AC-20. Oh, you hate to see it. You hate to see it.
Importantly, it hits him in the leg and it just blows the leg off.
Right, right. Blows the leg off. That's right. Ugh.
Which to me raised the question of like, is there still some old Justin in there? Like he's been doing the whole heel promo cut through most of these books. But is this like the moment where he chose to shoot Andy in the leg? Like he didn't cockpit him like he did on Solaris? Or
yeah. This is what I like to think. I like to think that even though Andy forgot about it not being a Lexor, Andy still maneuvered pretty good on Justin. Maybe even better than Justin thought. And Justin was probably mad, but he probably never meant to kill Andy. But I think the leg is probably all he was able to get. But I don't think Justin ever wanted to kill him. This is where he left him.
Andy and the Centurion lying on the ground. He can hear and feel Yin Lo Wang approaching. And he's like, man, this is it. He's going to put that autocannon right up the cockpit. And it's over. I'm going to be a crater in moments. Goodbye, cruel world. But no. Justin doesn't shoot. He just approaches and Justin gives him like a, I did you a favor, Andy. It's a real like, I'll let you live this time. You better not see you again. And then he leaves. He leaves him there. Leaves him on the ground.
It's funny because it's very likely Justin will be seeing him soon.
Yeah. Don't make this mistake and come after me again. He does say that. Don't come after me again. I'm like, Andy never came after you ever. I guess here, technically, but he was just, this is his posting. Yeah, like, dude, you job. Came here. Yeah.
Justin is, he is the rule of cool. So we can't be too hard on him.
Give Justin some credit for his mind games here. Andy was tilted the whole time from the beginning. First, the diversionary.
Oh,
thing,
for sure.
And then this. And then when he gets here, Justin's talking all that talk. Andy made some mistakes. And I think it's because he was not thinking clearly. Justin's got he's that cerebral assassin, right? He gets in your mind. He gets in your mind, He plays mind games. But, dude, that's basically it for the Bethel raid. Because after that, when Justin leaves Andy on the ground, it, like, jump cuts. It does a little time skip to where Andy and Delta Company, they're back on the dropship, right? A little time passes. And Andy, of course, is like, he's pointing at the map like, look, they're going, if we head out at 2.5 Gs and we fly close enough to third planet, we'll get a slingshot. We can catch them. We can catch them before they get out of here. If like the math is perfect, we can catch them. Come on.
Remember, Justin's goal was only to delay Andy's forces until that ship could get off the ground, because they have what they came here for. And so they've ran.
Yes, this is where the team has to explain to Andy that it's insane to chase the Capellans at this point. And he's like, no, look, we can make it work. We can. And they're like, no, dog. Like, I'm sorry.
We called it a day.
That ain't happening.
We got the time cards punched. It's it.
Yeah.
So hold on. I'm sorry. I'm still on the last scene. So another thing is, you were saying Justin made it sure that Andy was like, you don't come after me again. In a way, don't you think he was kind of like being like, hey, dude, don't come after me, right? Because isn't that the last thing Justin would actually want here? Not because he wants to protect the Capellans that he's working for, like, but because he wouldn't want Andy to risk his life.
He doesn't want to kill Andy.
In vain.
It's like one of the he doesn't only want to people kill Andy. He likes.
Yeah. Exactly. And so when he's literally trying to scare him off, like in like one of those old Western movies when it's like the cowboy's got to get rid of his horse and he's like, shoo, get out of here, mister. Yeah.
Go on, get.
Go on, get. He's literally trying to get it. He's like, I'm going to try and scare you into not following me.
I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to tell where Justin's promo cut ends and his real feelings begin.
It's true.
Also, how's he going to follow him? He's Mask Ravka. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but is Andy going to like raid Sion? Like,
they're going to slingshot past the gas giant. And
I got an idea.
It could work.
Put Andy in the Marauder. Drop him on Sion. Let's see what happens. You know what I'm saying? Hear me out.
I don't know. I think we give him the Hunchback. Let him go to that.
Yeah. Man, oh, wait. You know, that Centurion got pretty messed up, though. We might need a new mech for Andy. Like, unfortunately.
No surprises there. Yeah.
I mean, maybe they can repair it.
Listen, he got two rides out of that one.
Yeah.
Let's say that's a good fit for him so far.
Yeah.
All right. So we're back on the dropship. Andy wants to chase him. We can't. That's insane. No, we're not doing that. And this is where, okay, dude, I love this part. All right. So if you remember, Teradyne was like the company that like the facility was operating under. And so they're in the little tactical center, their little briefing room. This guy walks in and Andy recognizes him as the Teradyne chairman. All right. It's like this suit, like this corpo, this dude. They're like, oh, I know this guy. And he just walks in and they're like, hey, you know, this is a closed meeting. No civilians here. This is a military meeting. I love this. The dude walks over to the little scanner and he like pulls out his ID, right? And he scans the thing. And then on the display, it pops up like his credentials, right? This guy is actually, he's counterintelligence division. He's counterintelligence. It turns out that, I don't know, I think it's funny. It's like, oh, the dude from that company is here, but actually, it's actually Richard Dorval from the CID. He's like a spy master type of guy. I just thought, I was like, yeah, dude, I love when people are like, actually, I'm counterintelligence. Yeah, and he sends Porter and Crayon out. He's like, you guys get out of here. I was never here, okay? You guys never saw me, all right? And they're like, sure, and everyone leaves. It's just like him and Andy. They leave. Andy looks at the guy like, okay, what's going on here? What is this? So Richard here tells Andy that, one, Prince Davian sends his congratulations. Great job. You guys crushed it. Andy, of course, doesn't think so. He's still sulking, right? He thinks that this was a horrific failure, top to bottom.
He's like, you don't need to rub it in, man.
Yeah. He thinks he'll be shamed. This guy shows up and says, the prince is quite happy with what you guys did here, right? He literally says that he's like, buddy, you got to cheer up. All right, what's with the long face? I mean, like, it was legitimately impressive. Number one, good call in the field, splitting your forces, right? Going back like that. I just mean, you had to make a decision. You made the best decision. He's like, the prince appreciates it. You know, we watched all the ROMs, of course. We saw a good cover story with the thing about the, you know, with the miniaturization. Sure, good call in the field. Number two, we bagged the ravens. We salvaged those ravens. That's good data. We got those ravens.
And I'm that like, is good data.
That's pretty good. They got two ravens. Yeah. Justin left two ravens on the ground back on Bethel.
At this point in the war, those are still probably, you know, that might be the first ravens they've ever gotten. Maybe. Which is, you know, that's something.
Good point. You know, Capellan tech never stays Capellan for that long, right?
Shout outs to the Caesar, right? Yeah,
he got the best stuff. And now we got it all. But yes, Andy is very upset. He's like, what are you talking about, man? They got away with the stuff. They stole the stuff. I was supposed to keep them from getting the stuff and they took it. And the guy tells him, yes. And that's why we're going to let him go. Okay? There's a twist. And there is a twist. We're just going to let him go. We're not going to make any attempt to follow them. And this is when Andy realizes, oh, this is all a setup. We were bait. This is just a work.
Again.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guy's like, listen, we needed to put up a convincing fight, right? We couldn't just let him have it. We had to make him work for it, make it believable. You know what I mean? Besides, you guys did great. He gives him the old like, listen, son, what you did here, it's going to save lives, okay? Maybe in the war. And Andy's like,
man, yeah. I don't think either of them in this conversation really know how true that is.
Yeah. They're both just like, yeah. He kind of does start to. And he's like, all right. He gets him kind of fired up. I like this, like, hype man shows up to be like, cheer up, bud. You crushed it. And he's like, I did crush it. Like, this is so funny. Get in the war early. I like, yeah, by the end, Andy's so fired up. He's even doing a little, he's like, and then, Justin, the last laugh will be mine. May it ring in your ears as you die. He never says stuff like this.
No, he's like, got a little too much time with Justin.
Yeah, he's getting Joker-fied. Yeah. He is. He's gone completely insane. It's so funny. Yes, this chapter ends with Andy vowing to have the last laugh. Terrifying. Terrifying energy.
Andy doesn't wear it well.
No.
You know, Justin's a much better brooder than Andy. But I'm sure you'll get him, bud.
Not today, but maybe someday in the future.
Maybe someday in the future. Definitely not in Sisseturian, though.
Yeah, he didn't use that one, but maybe the next one will be a better fit.
The Bethel Raid. That was it. So what
that was
results
it.
Of the Bethel Raid? Well, Justin got the stuff. He was right.
Justin got the stuff.
And he got
And he planted the stuff.
Yeah.
He got what he wanted. So he's going to look good to the Chancellor. And he planted that disc for his girlfriend.
Yeah.
So that, you know, hopefully St. Ives can be...
Yeah, so when the Confederation burns, he'll have somewhere to go.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Man, what a success. Two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
Justin, he crushed it.
Killed another Romano assassin.
Yeah.
Andy apparently did well. He's going to fail upward too.
It's a good day for everyone here.
Which is confusing.
Yes, very really. Much so.
But hey, here we are. It's looking up, I guess.
Yeah, there was a point when I was reading these two chapters together that we have been looking forward and hearing so much about the Bethel Raid that the chapter before this, the Bethel Raid's just like, we put him to sleep. We went in there, got the fibers, threw down our disc, surprise assassin, he's dead. Raid's over. And I was like, that can't be the Bethel Raid, can it? But then after reading this chapter, I felt much better about it because I was like, oh,
I satiated.
This was about setting up our Justin Andy square off that we've been waiting for. Like, that's much more center stage to the Bethel Raid in terms of.
Okay. Narrative. With all the things going on in the background, you know, the potential triple agent, Justin Zhang, he might be going back. Do you think we're going to get a final square off between Justin and Andy? Do you think we're going to see him fighting each other again?
After these two chapters, I feel like we might get a ramp up to one, but it never actually materializes.
Interesting.
I feel like they're going to want to. Now, Justin doesn't want it, and Andy does.
Yeah. Justin worked pretty hard for Andy to feel that way.
Yeah.
We'll have to see. But first, I think, you know, this completes a little bit of our Capellan story, and it was compelling.
Yeah, dude. This is perfect. What a good, it's like, okay. And also, I finally, it's like, we got to check in with Justin and Andy at the same time, right? How nice is that? We didn't have to jump back and forth. It's just, here they are together. Finally, these two chapters are awesome. It's funny, like, Morgan and Yorinaga have all that fateful meeting stuff, like, you know, fates intertwined, destinies. I'm just saying, they keep missing each other. I just mean, look at this. Justin and Andy did a perfect job. You want to talk about crisscrossing timelines, intersecting fateful meetings? This is it right here. This is the one I wanted. Really? Bethel is my Mallory's world. You know what I mean?
And with that, we've had one fateful meetup. But we'll have to see if we're still on track for another one in the next chapter.
Chapter 13. We are back on Lyons in the Isle of Skye. It is now the 15th of May. Now, I believe we just looked this up. The last time we were on Lyons with the Kellhound, that was like the 5th of April, right? It's been like over a month since then. And remember, they had to leave in 2 weeks. Wasn't that Lestrade?
Yep, that was Lestrade.
You guys got to be out in 2 weeks. Yeah, so this is like a little over a month later past that. Remember, this is the town of New Freedom. The Kellhounds helped build this for the survivors of the Silver Eagle incident from the first book. Okay, so we're back on Lyons. The chapter begins with Clovis. Okay, remember Clovis? So he is in a bunker comforting these children who are terrified because there are explosions thundering outside because New Freedom is being raided by the 3rd Deron regulars from the Combine. Okay, they're getting crushed, absolutely obliterated. This is so shocking, right? You're like, oh no. We just built this.
Yeah, we
were
just
here. And then
here.
The Combine shows up and like stomps it into dust.
These people have been through a lot already. It's unfortunate seeing them go through this too, which is what amounts to basically total war.
Yeah, I actually, when I started the first couple paragraphs here, I thought this was going to be another one of Stackpole, it's all a simulator attack, because it comes out of the blue. I was like expecting for it to be like, oh, it's a drill that they were running through. But unfortunately, it's not.
It does. He opens it up like basically in the middle of the action, right? That they're not initiating this fight. This has been going on for 2 days, right? The Kuretans have just incessantly, we don't know early on if it's artillery or if it's mechs just destroying the place, but either way, they've been through hell for 2 days.
It's so sad. He's just down here with all these children. They're so terrified, right? It's just so shocking. They were like, oh, back on New Freedom, what's going on? They're getting bombed, right?
Everyone's They're having crying. A real bad time.
The children are terrified. Clovis is in a bunker with, okay, and he's down here with Carla Bremen, right? Isn't she a teacher?
Yeah, Thor's ex-girlfriend.
Right, Thor's ex-girlfriend, okay? And of course, everyone is panicking. Now, I do like, they do have a lot of food and water down here. They do mention that. So they could, luckily, if they can stay hidden, they could hold up here for a while. Interestingly, like the shelter, they have extra supplies because the shelter is meant to hold much more, but they don't have that many people down there. And you're like, oh no, where are all the people? Because it's dire. It's so tragic. So Carla's down there with Clovis, right? They're down there with the children. She's freaking out. She's asking them, you know, what do I tell the children? They're asking questions. Are we going to be okay? Clovis tells them, it's going to be all right. All right. Or at least just tell them that. It's probably not. But tell him it's going to be all right. But the whole thing here, right, with this scene is that Clovis wants to see what's going on, right? He wants to go up there. He's like, I want to go check it out. However, Carla can't believe that he would leave at a time like this, that he would leave her and all these children, right? This is kind of like the conflict here.
Yeah, we get through this opening scene of it that Clovis isn't necessarily in a good space mentally about all this. He feels terrible that he's stuck down here, not able to help. And Carla's just trying to reassure him that, like, you being down here is, like, we've got to help take care of the kids in this situation. But from the last time we had our sit down with Clovis, had been seeing his self-confidence issues, that this is exacerbated.
This is dangerous, though. It's a trade-off, right? Getting intel on, like, are they near? Have they passed over us? Is it artillery? Are there mechs in the area? You know, getting that info, getting out of this bunker and seeing what's going on is, like, useful to gather that stuff. But it also can give everyone away, because if someone catches him and he doesn't have the means of dissuading them from, or they're able to get more people, you know, and come clear this out, it's all over. So yeah, it is risky, but it may be the move. We'll have to see.
Carla hates it. She can't believe it, but he's like, I gotta go. Though this is where he straps on the pistol, right? He's got a, what is it? The purse pistol, right? He's got this little gun.
The Smith & Webley Foxfire.
The Foxfire. Yeah, he's got a Foxfire.
It's cool that we get a little name for the small arm. I do like that they kind of pun Smith & Wesson. And Webley, also a very old weapons manufacturer, so they kind of just shoved them together in true Battletech fashion. Are they related to either of the ancient Terra companies? Who knows?
If so, watch out for that merger.
I don't even know if Webley's still in business. They're the ones who made the World War II, like, auto-ejecting revolvers. And I think they were seen in World War I. I don't know. But I don't know that they're still doing business offhand.
They came back.
They came back. They killed it's Wesson. Like, yeah, it's like Pontiac. Yeah. Right? Like, he killed Wes.
Wesson got taken out in the Amara Civil War.
I'm pretty sure Wesson's long dead already. In our...
They brought him back and took him out.
This is turning into a Futurama bit.
He's got his Foxfire. He straps it on. And he's like, I gotta get up there, Carla. And Carla's like, no, you don't, though. I mean... Or you could just stay here, but he's like, I gotta find out what's going on. Because she's like, you can't leave us. What sort of man would desert 30 children? And then he's like, oh, and he's like, there's this whole thing where, like, Carla scolds Clovis, right? And then he gets all like, this conversation is nuts.
He's looking inward.
He goes off here, yeah, like, in the bunker with the Foxfire on, like, next to the hatch. And then he's like, he pops off here, and we get this whole, he does a whole speech.
Yeah, he kind of dips his toes in the Allard social skills water here.
Yeah. He starts off by, like,
well, he's got these feelings he's been feeling, right? And he's externalizing them because they're in a tight spot, and this stuff squeezes out of you when you're real stressed. It's like all that energy you use to keep the stuff you bottle in, it comes out under that pressure, and he pops a little bit.
Yeah, he has this whole argument based on, why'd I have to get trapped in a bunker with my crush?
Yeah. I was talking about, no man would abandon 30 children. No man would have found himself in this predicament. A real man would have led everyone to safety far away from here. This implication that, like, if he was more of a man, they would be even more safer. It's just, I mean, maybe he could have done more, but the reality it looks like is probably not.
I think this bunker is I think this was the right call, though. Just to be right. clear, the secret bunker full of food, I was like...
That's still standing.
I wasn't implying it is the wrong one. I'm with you.
Right. Yeah, I think that we're totally, it's like he's just being... I mean, he literally expresses self-pity. He says that. He's like, I'm pitiful. And she's like, are you not pitiful?
This is about feelings and not reality, right?
It's very sad. Clovis is very sad. I mean, he thinks he's a freak, right? He's like, I'm a freak of nature. It's so sad. He kind of has like this whole episode here, right? Though Clovis, he does. He kind of has like a little bit of like a, it's like a bit of a panic attack, right? He has this whole episode kind of. He kind of goes off here in this very high stress situation down in the bunker, literally combine mechs up above. And he's just like, I suck. Like, I'm a freak. Ah, like... I just, like, you know, like, I want to be your boyfriend, but you hate me. I'm disgusting. And she's like, no, it's like, it's so sad.
I actually really think the way Carla handles this whole moment, it's very funny to parallel it back to the Melissa Silver Eagle incident when Clovis is basically like, stop. Like, you're having a full meltdown right now, and I need you to not do that. And I need you to focus up on, like, what's really important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Good point. He does. Right. He says that to Melissa. He like, get it together. Like, man. So he goes off on her and she slaps him across the face. Of course, she sets him straight, though. She's like, Clovis, you insult me. You're come on. Also, you're like putting words in our mouths. You're like assuming all this stuff.
It's unfair.
Yeah.
To them. She's right.
Yeah. He's like, man, you're cool. Everyone thinks you're cool.
We followed you in this bunker, didn't we?
Yeah. And Clovis is like, I mean, you wouldn't have gone to the dance with me. She's like, you didn't ask.
She hits him with like, you're always hanging out with all the cool people. You get along with everybody. You're hanging out with Dan Allard and Cat Wilson. And you're like, yeah, they probably are the cool crew.
Yeah.
He does. Yeah. Oh, you got along so easily. Oh, and of course, he eventually brings up Thor, right? It's like, you don't like guys like me, you know, you like guys like Thor. And it's like, oh, here we go. You know, why'd you bring up Thor? This is always like, Clovis, don't bring up Thor here. This is not the time to bring up Thor. But she is, though. She's like, I mean.
Well, it happened, so I'd argue it is. But you're right.
Yeah. I like to think like a bomb's gone off as he says it. She's like, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. And he's like, I'm talking about Thor.
Yeah. I mean, and she's basically like, is Thor hot? Yeah. But he's a moron.
He's just a big, tasty slab of meat.
Yeah. And I'm tired of morons. I like you, Clovis.
I do like she hits him with the, Clovis, I'm not a teenage girl looking for a date to the big dance. Yeah. Like she's kind of like, come on, things are, why are you even thinking like this? You're being childish.
Clovis kind of snaps back to attention. He's like, so you're telling me there is a chance?
Is there a chance? Yeah. And she's like, this isn't a contest. She is, though. She does take it in stride, though, right? She does lift his spirits here at the end. It is touching. By the end, you're like, oh, this did turn into kind of a cute little moment here. But, you know, he's like, well, you know, if I get through this, maybe we can hang out. And she's like, well, right. What does she say? You've no idea how awful my cooking, nor how voracious my appetite for truly bad holovids.
And she's a Hallmark Christmas special enjoyer.
That's totally what I was thinking of. I was like, yeah, some or.
See, I was thinking Bachelorette. Bachelorette 3025, you know, I'm sure it's all like sons of rich nobles. And
isn't that what it is now?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is kind of what it is now.
I like to think, okay, so I like to think that they get them from like a rental store, you know, like an old video rental store. Like, I like to think that here on, at least on Leon's, right? Like, they're still going to Blockbuster to get the, you know, the holovids.
They unearth the lost tech for it.
Blockbuster's lost tech.
I mean, except for the implied greater sophistication than current tech, it does meet half of the criteria to be lost tech.
So Clovis, he's going to go. He's got to go. She's like, all right, you can go. Unfortunately, as he exits, he turns to her and says, take heart, fair damsel. Beset by the dragon we may be, but no knight in shining armor would ever leave a lady in peril. I was like, Clovis, don't say that.
I see you pulled out your transatlantic accent for that one. I thought it was fitting.
It's so corny, though.
Yeah.
So, when I read this line, I was like, man, what a crazy thing to say.
I thought the same thing. I was like, he could have gone out on such a high note of like, I'll see you when I get back. And he says walked out.
He gives her this crazy line.
He hits her with the like Dead Poets Society angle.
Yeah, thank you. So Clovis leaves the bunker. It says he climbs up into the sub-basement, right? So they are under the mech bay. This bunker is, right? But he doesn't actually climb up into the mech bay floor. There's like a sub-basement under, you know, they're like in a bunker under the basement. And, you know, this is just for like utilities and stuff. He goes like crawling through pipes under the mech bay. Like he ends up finding his way like to like the pipes under Morgan Kell's office, right? He's like crawling under the base while the, you know, third Deron regulars are raiding just above him. And, you know, it's funny. I don't believe he actually has stated in the text now what his actually like intent is or plan or if he has one.
No.
I was actually wondering, I was like, what is he trying to do here? And I wasn't sure even what he was trying to send a message, but I don't know if he thought it through.
I mean, all we really got is he wants to do like kind of some like prodding reconnaissance, like see what the state of things are, like what's going on.
That's what I figured. A little sneaky peeky.
Some reconnoitering.
Yeah, it's trying to see what's going on. But he climbs through these pipes. He ends up under Morgan Kell's office. And he has like his gear with him, right? He brought some electronics gear. And so he like, we get this scene where he like taps the phone line, right? He snips the thing. He hacks in, all right? He taps the phone line. On the alphanumeric keypad dangling from the optical collar, he carefully typed in Comstar. I think that's funny. So to call Comstar, you just type Comstar. It's easy.
This is interesting that this is a way that you can even contact Comstar. You can just via landline. So anyone, this isn't something that's like maybe on some planets it is, or in some provinces or under certain house lords maybe or whatnot. But apparently you... like just any old person can pick up a landline and send an intergalactic message.
You know, standard data and message rates apply here.
Yeah. That's what's so funny. It's they do. He calls Comstar. And so he gets on the phone with the local Comstar office. Peace of Blake be with you. And he tells the Acolyte that he has a message from Morgan Kell. I don't know if it's Acolyte. It just says technician. But the technician tells him that, well, actually points out, in compliance with an order from Duke Lestrade, Colonel Kell has left the world. But I can put you in touch with his contact, Clovis Holstein. And Clovis is like, I am Clovis Holstein. It's like, I need to talk to the colonel. Put me on. We're being occupied by the third Deron regulars. I gotta tell them.
Don't you hate situations like this?
Yeah, it's funny. And then you feel like on the other end, it's just so sedate. Like he's just like on his terminal, like as it's like cutting back and forth, the music changes. It's like back to Clovis. Dun, 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 dun. It's like back to the dude, like do, do, do. And he's just like
sitting in a cubicle.
Just one moment. Yeah, just one moment, sir. And he's like, they're right above me. They have guns. Yeah. Here's what's funny, though. So the technician tells Clovis, well, we don't have a location for Colonel Kell. We don't know where he is. On our records, it's weird. We actually, our database, we don't know where he is. Do you know where he is, Clovis? And Clovis is like, well, it's funny. I think he refers to like a cover story, right? He's like, I think they're at Alpheca. I think that's right. The technician says, it's not what my computer shows, Mr. Holstein.
This is the point where you start to lose your cool waiting on a phone line support, where you're like, if you're showing something, just tell me what that information is, but please.
Comstar's playing the tax man.
Yeah, but it also appears that they're trained to like solicit data from them.
Yeah.
They're like, the Comstar doesn't know where Colonel Kell is, but I bet they would like to know that. So, like this is, you know what I mean? This is like, oh, where's Colonel Kell? And he won't send the message until he can confirm the location. And eventually Clovis tells the technician, all right, they should be at Ride. The tech chuckled lightly. No, excuse me, clucked. The tech clucked lightly. I just noticed. That's funny. So apparently that satisfies them because he's like, okay, do you want to send this message to Ride? And McLovin is like, yeah, send it. And so, oh, well, first of all, the technician tells him that the message won't get there until like next week. And Clovis is like, that's not fast enough. This is an emergency. You got to send it now. And the technician tells him, we can send it now, but it's going to be very expensive.
Yeah. We were just talking with Jason Hansa, they're going to literally have to line up the towers.
Yeah. Priority transmission.
But that's okay. Clovis has an idea of how to deal with this too.
So the technician wants to know how he's going to pay for it. And this is so funny. And, I don't know why he says this, but Clovis tells the technician, charge it to the third Deron regulars, okay? And I feel like that's almost like a joke where he's like, where he's just so frustrated where you're like, who should I charge it to? He's like, I don't know, charge it to the third Deron regulars. And the technician's like, very well, initiating phone call. And then the phone starts ringing above him in like the office above him. The phone starts ringing. And like a combine trooper, he hears like the footsteps and the dude picks up the phone and he's like, moshi moshi. And immediately,
that is about as terrible as that could go for Clovis in this moment.
It's so nuts.
I would argue, technically, he is getting the point across. If they know where that this is coming from, and that someone's speaking Japanese in Leon, that technically, the information is received.
Maybe they actually do charge to the third Deron regular. Wouldn't that be funny if they also get a bill and they're like, what is this?
Someone's going to get in trouble like, for
who's
it.
Who sent a message on Leon's?
Who's calling collect a ride?
Yeah, someone's going to commit seppuku over this. So I guess that this also... an alarm immediately goes off. Like, I guess that the phone ringing then tips them off that someone's here or that something is going on because they immediately start hunting Clovis. Like, an alarm goes off and, they immediately start, like, coming down the pipe, right? Or they, like, you know, like a dude drops into the pipe, right? I was like, what? Also, how'd they know it was there, though? Like, the phone rang and the dude was like, hello, who's this? And they're like, there's a man down there. There's a little man in the access. And I was like, how did they, but I was like, how'd they know that though? I was actually, how'd they know it was there? Or maybe it's just that maybe they were just like, search everything quickly. And there's like this access hatch and the dude jumps down there.
There are more questions here. Like if he's tied into the phone system, how did it ring? Like, and it's like, oh, is there two lines because he's tying this one up? You guys remember landlines, right? And, so
yeah,
there is questions. I'm assuming we're going to have to just assume we don't have the full picture here. Yeah. And that there's some kind of giveaway, whether it's literally him talking and someone, you know, the phone rings and someone was already kind of onto him, and or if there's some kind of other indicators that we just aren't privy to.
Yeah, I took it as that he's in here making all this noise, slamming all this shut. Basically going, oh no, as the guy picks up the phone, since he's tied into that phone line, he'd hear it through the receiver, realizing that someone's
tapped
into
the phone line. Oh, that's a
good point
too. Yeah.
So this dude drops down into the pipe and Clovis shoots him though. I mean, he does. He's just like, ah, he pulls up the foxfire and shoots him in the stomach.
He kills him with his purse gun.
Yeah. He gets him though, and he runs, and Clovis manages to slip away, like into the forest, right? That's the thing. He shoots this guy. He finds this access way to the exterior, and he like runs. He's like trying to make his way to the forest and like get away.
This is smart, right? He doesn't run back to the bunker right away, which is big kudos to him, because that probably would have got everyone killed.
Yeah. And when he gets outside, he's like, at least it's nighttime. I didn't know what time it was, so I got a lucky break here.
Oh, good point. Right, yeah. So you think Clovis is going to get away, right? But here's what's so funny. Runs into the forest. Immediately, an ISF ninja commando drops from a tree above him. I'm not joking. This actually happens. Like, this ninja was waiting in a tree. I guess.
So hear me out. I think this makes sense. I know that it appears to be random, right? It's just like, what is this ninja doing in this tree? But it actually makes sense that they would set up listening and observation posts. And I mean, it's a very Cretan way to do it, kind of like climbed up in a tree. Because remember, this is just outside the mech base. So they are still probably looking for what we would call squirters in an attack, which is once you start pushing an objective from one side, you see people starting to run out the other side, generally. So I actually would argue that even though this does seem like random ninja in a tree, it makes sense.
So Clovis is a squirter.
I mean, it's been 2 days, so technically no, but at this point, they're kind of controlling the area, so...
call them squirters.
You just wanted to call Clovis a squirter, though, so... And I'm not willing to take that away from you.
Yes, we do. It's crazy, though. This dude jumps down from a tree, immediately disarms Clovis, just slaps it out of his hand. Like, give me that. Ah! And he's like, ah! And the pistol goes flying, and he's like, congratulations by getting this far. Shh! You know, he's a... Oh, he's got the sword against his throat, right? He like comes up behind him and he's like, you have eluded many who are your betters. I knew I would find you out here. And you're like, this is so crazy, man. I did not expect this ninja. He tells Clovis he's going to take him back to HQ, right? I'll take you back to headquarters. Clovis totally gives up, though. He's like, all right, it's over. I should have never come out here. This was a mistake. He doesn't fight it. He's like, okay, you can, I mean, what's he going to do, though? Clovis is captured at sword point and... He's about to be escorted back to the headquarters, and then the ninja commando man explodes. And that's the end of the chapter, right?
Again, this mirrors the Silver Eagle incident, as Aaron was saying earlier. Only it's unlikely to be Indy Redburn coming to the rescue.
Right. The last line is, lit by the scarlet beam of a mech's medium laser, he burst into flame. And you're like, oh my God.
That sounds awful.
That ninja exploded. Yeah, so he gets mech lasered. The chapter ends with, so there's someone in a mech out here, and he shot the ninja and saved Clovis.
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I see this as literally a spotlight, essentially, like a focused spotlight beam. Just like, and it's just like, whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah, it's like an alien abduction looking thing.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, where it's, yeah, the lighting, hey.
An alien abduction meets the scene from Terminator 2.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Which I imagine isn't, it's pretty shocking for Clovis.
Yeah, Clovis is like within sword's reach away from this man.
You know, Carla was right, though. She stayed the bunker.
That's what I thought when I finished this one up, too. I was like, Clovis didn't really accomplish anything here.
No.
I disagree. He did get the message off. I mean, he didn't say anything, but some dude who's in Lyons sent a message to the Kellhound saying, mushy, mushy, which I think might be enough to get across the point.
Oh, see, I took it that the message did not get off. They were calling for a confirmation on payment before they sent a message.
Maybe.
It'd be crazy to call someone else and be like, all right, we're sending a message. What's the message, other person? Mushy, mushy.
Also, the Kellhound's actually on Rye.
Dun, dun.
Spoiler.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I was talking about it like we didn't know that yet. But Kanan's correct. It turns out they're not there. And so, yeah, he really, unfortunately, didn't accomplish anything.
That's it.
And with that, if the Kellhounds aren't on Rye, we'll have to find out if they're somewhere a little closer to home in the next chapter.
Chapter 14. So the Kellhounds are here. Turns out they're not on Rye. They're actually still here on Lyon. The whole thing was that they were gone, right? The Kellhounds were gone. But it turns out they're not gone. They were here. Immediately you're like, oh, weird. You know, they must have known this is going to happen or something. Either they never left or like at some point they turned back around. Anyway, so the chapter opens with, it was Dan, by the way, who lasered the ninja. It was Dan in the Wolfhound, right? So it's like there is no time skip. It's just like an immediate continuation. So the ninja explodes into flames, and then Clovis looks up, and it's like the Wolfhound. Dan's like, come on, Clovis, get in here. You know, or no, actually, right at the beginning, he actually picks him up in his hand. That's right. He scoops Clovis up in the hand of the Wolfhound.
Yeah, and Dan takes a moment to think to himself. He's like, he'll be all set in there as long as I don't clench the fist.
Yeah, don't clench the fist. That would be very unfortunate, right? At the end of the battle, it's like, and how's Clovis? And Dan looks down and he's like, oh no. Like, he didn't make it, Colonel.
Clovis is spaghetti now.
Dan picks up Clovis and then he lasers a machine gun nest and it explodes. And the guys go like, ah, and the ammo cooks off. It's cool. He explodes a machine gun nest. A classic. Oh, so this is where Dan notices that they're getting air cover up. The Combine. They're launching fighters. They're going to like launch interceptors. Well, it's two Shuldagar. Is that right, Brent? You know these?
So I have never said them out loud or talked to anyone about a Sholagar. So your guess is truly as good as mine.
It's a Sholagar.
The Sholagar, these things are cool. They're kind of these disc-shaped fighters. And like from the disc, like cockpit juts out from them with two vertical tail wings. And they're aerospace fighters. They've got a SRM-4 and two medium-class lasers. At 35 tons, they're kind of just these light aerospace fighters, real zippy.
Disc-winged, it describes them.
Yeah, I would say that that is an apt description of them. I have never used them on the board, just like I've pretty much never used aerospace in any traditional capacity, at least not in classic Battletech. I've tried to use aerospace in Alpha Strike. It was far less complicated, but still unsure if I'm doing it correctly. Hopefully someone at Adepticon can correct my wrongs.
I have also not used one on the board before, but I have thrown a Frisbee.
Frisbee, 35-ton aerospace fighter, basically the same thing to me. Let me ask you, Aaron, did your Frisbee have 10 single heat sinks?
I didn't ask.
Well,
but I don't think so.
Unfortunately, we don't really get to see them in action because before they can even get off the runway, Major Fitzpatrick,
he's back.
Commander of the Kellhounds Air Battalion. Him and the boys, they come through and they just obliterate these things, right? They don't even get off the runway. They get torched. They crush them. It's sick. It is really cool. You're like, oh no, fighters. And then he's like, we got them. Yeah, they don't get it up. So this is where Morgan calls in, sounding very grim. Dan realizes over the phone, Seamus, nothing leaves here. Dan, is Clovis here? Yeah. All right. Final orders, people. So he tells him that Osirin, right, the infantry commander, him and his guys, they wanted to check out, they like investigated this spot in the woods they passed, and they discovered that it was actually a mass grave. Okay, so it is confirmed that the 3rd Dieron regulars appear to have killed most, if not all, except for maybe the children in the bunker and Carla Bremen and Clovis of the residents of New Freedom. It's an atrocity. It's so sad. They killed everyone. The whole Styx colony, the whole Heimdall, all of our friends basically wiped out in one stroke.
It's horrible.
It's so tragic.
Which also explains why we're not getting our usual joking, lighthearted Kellhounds here.
Why'd they do this? It's so crazy.
There's got to be a reason, right? Even the Takashi Kurita Kuritans are not this vicious, generally. There's got to be a reason.
It's strange, right? It is. So basically, Morgan is calling in to say, kill everyone. No one's leaving. We're going to destroy the 3rd Dieron regulars. No one escapes, okay? So if they're going to wipe out the Combine forces, we can't have Clovis in Dan's hand. So Dan tells Clovis to climb in, right? I think he like puts the hand up to the neck so that Clovis can like climb in the little hatch. There's a little hatch on the Wolfhound's neck, it says. I thought, oh, that's cool. Little hatch on the neck. You know, Clovis gets in there, puts his little cooling vest on, headset. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, they got like a little jump seat in there for him. Clovis, he like straps in.
Yeah, this is actually a pretty common thing for Inner Sphere mechs. There's a, as we said previously, there's a really cool shrapnel that kind of talks about the difference in kind of mech design cockpits over the years and between factions. And in the Inner Sphere, it's very common that these are designed around not only for you carrying, you know, potentially extra people, and it's basically its own like glamping setup. Often there'll be literally a bed and some other like utilities, kind of like a small Japanese hotel.
A capsule hotel? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, a jump seat's just kind of like a small little piece of the accoutrement that comes with the cockpit of in the living area of a battle mech.
So that article, by the way, it's from Shrapnel 11, and it is titled Cockpit Amenities in Modern Battle Mech, or When You Gotta Go, You Gotta Go, by Wunji Lau. Good article. Check it out. It's really good. Yeah, and just talks about all the stuff in the cockpit. So he's feeling terrible, right? It's like, thanks for saving my worthless hide. And Dan's like, man, what happened here?
I imagine Dan's just glad he's alive.
Yeah.
Right? From everything that Dan's seen so far.
But this is an active battle. I mean, this thing is, I mean, they just showed up and it's a whole base full of Combine. So it's like, oh, we immediately go into this combat sequence, right? It's like jarring almost, where it's like, all right, climb in. And then they're just like, And it's just like, we just get going. What is it? Okay, we're in the Wolfhound. Dan, okay, he engages a Clint, right? This Clint comes out. I'm like, oh no, not a Clint. Got an auto, what, you know, what happens here? Dan takes an auto cannon round. Boom. He eats one. Oh, this is, so he's like, all right, don't worry. I got this. And so Dan's like, check it out. I'm an alpha strike. And Clovis is like, what? And he's like, and he hits it. And Dan and Clovis just start sweating. You know, they just like, they just turn like, it's so he's like, oh, don't, he's like, don't worry, alpha strike. No. Ah. He's like, dee, dee, dee. It's so funny. He shoots all the lasers. The Clint gets melted, though. It's very effective. He's like, oh, no. Like the Clint pilot is like, oh, like, yeah, he eats like all the lasers from the Wolfhound. And so he's like, oh, I got to jump out. He tries to jump out. He just hits the dirt, though. He takes him down. Oh, that's right. Before he pulls all the triggers, he tells Clovis, it's going to get hot. And then,
yeah, the Clint has a rough time. As soon as it tries to jump out, the jump jet that's mounted on its back detaches, so it just lifts off just enough to fall forward.
The mech's head snapped off at the neck and bounced into a shallow gully. Yeah, it's extremely effective. Great call.
Wild.
I mean, I was like, wow, Alpha Strike, look, it's so effective.
It's funny because the Clint, so it's a 40-tonner, right? But I would argue that the Wolfhound really has the leg up both in speed and firepower on this thing, especially if it's what I presume is the it's the Clint TAC 2 TAC 3T versus the one TAC 2R. Okay, so I actually love this 40 tonner. Now, we've talked about these early Succession Wars era 40 tonners before, and 40 tonners, they get better. Okay, later on, as weight savings technology comes into play, but they're kind of in this weird category. That doesn't mean that they're useless by any stretch of the means, you know, like a weapon system is a weapon system and you get it into a fight and they're cost appropriate, right? So even though they're not as good as other mechs, it's like they still are worth usually what you pay for them in battle value. So this thing's got two Martel medium lasers and an Armstrong J-11 AC-5 with 1 ton of ammunition, which is, it's like a worse Wolverine. But I still think this thing has its place. I do, actually, I have fielded the 2R, which was originally a prototype variant. And it's funny because for some reason in my head, the default Clint, I've always presumed, was the 2R, which has a lone AC-10 with a single medium lasers, and it is sans the jump jets that got this one killed, right? I have used that Clint, and to good effect, that lone AC-10 really kind of packing a punch for a early Succession Wars 40-tonner. The new art definitely does it some favors, too, because it was kind of a spindly mech. It's clearly, the name is a reference to Clint Eastwood, right? And it's kind of this idea, it's like this gunslinger, right? It's a cool mech for a 40-tonner. I don't hate it. It's not the best, and I think some later era ones are even a little bit more fun. It goes a decent 97 kph, so it's not the worst. Unfortunately, this Dan's Wolfhound just cuts through it like butter, and well, I say unfortunately, but fortunately,
the new art is really cool.
Yeah, I'd say I'm normally excited when we get to do our new mechs talks, and this is one that I don't hold a lot of love for.
There's two mechs me and you have made fun of over the years in the 40-tonner category, and it's the Clint and the, as we've named it, the Wit Worthless.
Yep.
They're both real awesome. Okay mechs. I really do love both of them. The Whitworth is the actual name. I don't think we've talked about the Whitworth on here yet, have we?
We wouldn't know if we did.
I swear we did. I won't get too into it in case we do. I think they're fun mechs to field. They're relatively cheap, but the mech in hand is always better than the one you don't have. And so I definitely would take one of the two over not having a mech to bring to the fight.
I think I'd take the desk. I'm sorry. This will be my hill to die on, that the Clint will stay back for me.
Both of them are coming to us in the Mercenary Kickstarter, which I'm looking forward to. I am looking forward to integrating them into forces. I probably won't use their succession error versions. I'll definitely probably use them in later timelines.
Yeah, I will say I'll preface my distaste for them because the only time we have used them is the succession error variants. So.
Right. Right.
So maybe they get cooler later. I just haven't looked.
They both look cool, though. The new art for them are both
I'll agree. Phenomenal. They got quite the glam up there.
Well, the Clint, ladies and gentlemen.
It's all right. So
It was.
So Stan lasers the Clint. The Clint crashes, and then immediately a rifleman pulls up. And they're like, oh, here we go. We got a rifleman. That's exactly Dan like gets on the radio like, it's Dan. I got a rifleman. And this part's really cool, though, right? I mean, at first, Dan, like, shoots it with the laser, like, I got him, and then he's like, man, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to get anywhere with this. You know what? I'll just try to, and so his whole thing is he's just going to try to outmaneuver it, right? He tries to get out of the firing arc. Man, does he know that riflemen can shoot behind them?
It's the Allard family weakness. They don't know riflemen that well.
Yeah. Oh my God. I just thought about, I was like, what if in this scene he got behind it and then the arms flipped over and he was like, no.
No, I feel like Stackpole got all of his riflemen flip arm antics out in the first book.
I would be so upset if...
I'd actually forgotten about the appearance of one here. I was actually a little surprised. I was like, another rifleman.
And then we get a look at it, and it's Gray Noten. Like, oh, no. He's working for the Combine.
But why? Because I'm mercenary, son.
It's cool, though. So he tries to outmaneuver it. He's trying to get out of the firing arc, right? That's the whole thing. But like, right. His building is in the way. He can't go any further. There's this building. So he's like, what am I going to do? So Dan walks through the building. You know, he's like, I am in a mech. So he just keeps going. It totally works, though. It's like it like throws the rifleman off. He completely whiffs with the lasers.
You know, we built it. That makes it ours to wreck, right?
We'll just build this mech bay to the third Dihon regulars.
Oh, now, there is a bit here where Dan tosses Gina's sash to Clovis to like tie himself in tighter. Right, because Clovis is getting bounced around really bad when they're like running through the building. I thought that was funny because he always has that sash with him and he's like, here, use this. So what's so funny is the rifleman shot all of his lasers and he missed. So the rifleman is like hot, right? You can see like the glowing coils. He can't use those lasers again. Anyway, oh, right. Yeah, Dan, hey, Clovis, we got him. He's cooking himself one shot. And so this is, but Morgan calls on the radio. And Morgan's like, Dan, stay where you are. This one's mine. And so at this point, Morgan's archer appears like on the ridge line. We get this shot. It's like silhouetted. Of course, everyone like looks over at it and like it doesn't register on the scanners. I can't target it. Only visuals.
He's like, look, Clovis, I'm not crazy.
It's cool, though. He just likes kind of struts towards this rifleman. And the rifleman opens up on the archer, though, right? He tries to shoot him. All the shots miss, of course. And so you just see the, like, LRM racks flip open. And Morgan launches, like, full rack LRM at the rifleman. And he just explodes. He just completely destroys this thing with missiles. The rifleman goes toppling over. And, like, the auto cam and ammo explodes. Oh, yes, no pilot ejected. He's done. It's so ice cold, though. At the end, Morgan just... tells Dan like it had to be done, Captain. Let's move. And yeah, they just continue hunting because they're gonna kill everyone.
I believe this is our second instance. I haven't been keeping good track, but I think this is number two of our stack pulling to happen. You know, we get the line, close your eyes, Clovis. His reactor's been hit.
Oh, good point.
I assume this thing goes up in a small semi-nuclear explosion.
It does. Yeah, it does. It does have a reactor. Yeah, it blows up. Good point. This is, this is referred to as stack pulling, right? Dude, that's it, though. The Kelhans are going to crush these dudes, right? They're on a warpath.
Yeah, the mass graves, like I was saying, this is unusual even for the sometimes more vicious Draconis Combine.
It's so shocking.
Something's going on here, right? There's something we don't have the full picture on.
This is like the saddest thing that's happened so far in these books.
Yeah, it's a real downer. It seems like Clovis and his small gang might be quite literally the only people that are going to make it out of this.
It must hit the Kelhounds especially hard, too, since they just completed their raid on the Genyosha home planet.
Yeah.
But then they moved all the civilians out. They handled it very civilly, where even though they destroyed everything, they didn't take innocent lives in the action. So to come back here and see it paid back in full.
That and the Kellhounds have worked so hard to keep these people alive. I mean, this is the second time they've been rescued. I mean, it's got to feel, there's got to be a level of helplessness that comes with that, right? I can only imagine what's going through their head. Like, were these people just meant to die? Like, what? Is this our fault? Like, what could we have done differently? And why did they do this? And in contrast to the way they just treated Urinaga, who is the famed enemy of the Kellhounds.
It is surprisingly vicious, right? You're like, what happened here? Suspicious. Who could have been behind it?
True indeed.
Well, we'll have to find out who the Kellhounds think is behind it in the next chapter.
Chapter 15. So we're still in Lyons. It's like the next day or like 2 days later. The battle is over. The Kellhounds have won because they're still here and the Combine isn't.
Usually a pretty good sign of victory conditions.
Yeah. The chapter starts. We get a Kellhounds meeting. The Kellhounds are assembled in a conference room. Dan is feeling very sore, right? He's been beat up. Actually, he's like, man, I haven't been this sore since that chair went rocketing off and slamming into that wall. And I broke my collarbone and all that.
You guys remember where he comically sped in a spiral at that wall?
I love that.
Just chapter starts off with Dan realizing he's in his 30s.
Yeah, he's a little saddle sore.
We're looking out the window to the ruins of New Freedom, right? The place has been completely destroyed. The buildings the Kellhounds had labored to build look like twisted, diseased, defoliated metal trees. I mean, complete devastation. Scattered throughout the area were the remains of 24 mechs.
That's two companies.
Yeah, they killed all of them. We actually learn a little bit more about how the battle went. So, who's here? We got Con O'Bannon. Right. Remember Con O'Bannon? He is the commander of the 2nd Mech Battalion. All right. And so they were outside St. John's. All right. They broke the regulars, but could not prevent two companies from retreating in good order to drop ships. So they didn't stop all the Combines. Some of them did get away. Two companies were able to retreat. Okay. Salome Ward is here. Of course, she's the commander of the 1st Mech Battalion. This is interesting because it says that her battalion managed to overrun the regulars' command position, and the enemy general died in the assault, and the second in command surrendered once he realized that his dropships had been cut off. He then asked for and received permission to commit seppuku. So they lost both their 1st and 2nd in command.
I do want to add that before committing seppuku, he did make sure that his men would be not poorly treated in the surrender.
That's true.
This is unusual considering the kind of the murdering of civilians we're seeing. That it seems like for Combine troops, they're actually pretty honorable.
But the atrocity.
Right. Again, things seem to not add up.
Yeah. Major Fitzpatrick is here, and so is Major O'Siren. Dan notes that he looks terrible, right? Because he was, it was him and his guys who had to confirm the mass grave site. So it's grim. So Morgan Cat and Clovis arrive, and one, we learn that we got 7 dead Kellhounds, 30 dead in total, okay? And which I will say, I was like 30 dead total. That's terrible. But honestly, when I read the attack, I was like, oh man, I bet this is I thought it would be worse than 30. Not, you know, this is an atrocity. But honestly, I don't know why when I saw this, I was like 30. All right. That's I was really like, man, it's going to be like 100 people. I really did. I thought that, but I was like, okay, 30. It was like there was less resident than I realized. It was quite a small settlement.
Yeah.
Well, we also know that the numbers from the Styx incident, they took a lot of losses there as well in terms of their combatants. So this would have been the survivors of that. So 30 might have been what was there.
Also, they talk about how, I mean, the Kellhounds are here. Like they were, like they weren't supposed to be here. They knew something was up. Right. They actually turned around. They actually did leave the planet and then like intentionally left and then came back around. Right. They like went around the moon or something. And oh, right. And they like used the moon to cover their approach to like come in stealthily. It was like this coordinated thing where they're going to leave, loop back around.
Well, they probably had a bad feeling about it. Well, the way Lestrade worded his strongly worded order, I was concerned. I was like, you know, what's this about?
However, because of this, they won't make it to Riot in time. They're not going to make it to Riot in time. They're meeting with the Genyosha. That's the whole thing. We've had scenes where it's like, are they going to be there? They're definitely going to be there. Good, like Colonel Kell would never. And it's like, oh, they're not going to be there, which is kind of funny. I'm like, oh, this like fated meeting gets postponed again. They're not going to make it.
Again, like ships in the night, right?
It happened again. It's so funny. I was like, man, they're not going to make it to Riot. Good point. And they talk about, well, do you think Yorinaga will wait? But probably not. He's not just going to hang out, wait around for us. And it's not like they can't even just jet off right now anyway, right? Morgan's tells everyone, besides, you know, we still got to clean up this mess. I like, Dan doesn't understand though. I mean, he thinks, didn't we? Like, aren't we done here? Like, what else do we have to do? So we get this bit where, listen, Clovis explained, okay, that they went through the ISF documents. Actually, I think it's funny. He starts off, despite Dan's valiant effort to destroy this building by backing his wolfhound through it, he only managed to short out the entire electrical system and collapse the corridor leading to the computer center. However, they were able to recover the data, so they went through the ISF documents.
I was like, man, Clovis is throwing shade here. Like, yeah. Dan just came up and beamed a ninja for him, and Clovis is already on the attack.
I'm just happy to see his spirits recovering so soon. But yeah, he totally.
So what's funny, though, is because of what he did, though, this prevented the staff from dumping the contents of the computers, right? They all had
on account of the giant hole in the building.
Yes. So they were able to recover the documents. And so they learned that the ISF had received information indicating that the Stick Settlers were planning to assassinate the coordinator, and they had orders to destroy New Freedom.
Well, that'll do it, right? This is that missing puzzle piece as to why they were willing to kill every man, woman, and child here on Styx. As you were saying, Aaron, the fact that they were mercenaries probably assisted in this kind of discriminatory killing, but this is clearly the primary catalyst for their brutality.
Yeah, it definitely gives us motivation to understand why there was an attack here in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to assassinate the coordinator? What are they talking about?
Obviously, it answers some questions, but it leaves us with more questions also.
It's heartbreaking. Osirin, he's very upset. He points out to Clovis, you know, had you not gotten those kids down to that shelter, they probably wouldn't have made it. They would have been shot too. I mean, Clovis is a hero. He saved those children. Oh, I like this bit where Dan takes a moment to remember, like, this young couple. He helped them build their house, and they were killed in the attack. And it's, like, so sad. So Dan points out that also, like, wouldn't the Combine be relatively chill with, like, a Heimdall colony? Heimdall is, like, a subversive element within their enemy's nation.
Yeah, it's a bit of a enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of deal. Yeah,
they're usually not actively hostile against Heimdall, right? Dan points this out. However, Morgan reminds us that, well, they're still kind of mad about the Silver Eagle, right? They remember, still kind of mad about that. The dragon never forgets, you know what I mean? We've been through this.
He is afraid of yellow birds.
Yeah. So it's here that Dan wonders who fed the ISF, right? Who gave them this intel? And, you know, Morgan, of course, assumes Lestrade, right? I mean, come on. I mean, that's what Morgan says. They're all like, Lestrade. Salome wonders, though, why would Lestrade facilitate an attack on his own holdings? This is his planet. Isn't that strange? Oh, however, I see here, Fitzpatrick points out that if you think about it, though, Lestrade doesn't really lose anything. Also, the Combine can't hold the world. They didn't bring enough troops to, like, occupy Lyons. This is clearly going to be like a raid. But however, this does provide a good excuse to break from the Commonwealth, right? He's always complaining about those attacks. This is like a legitimate, like, atrocity that's taken place on his soil. Once again, Archon does nothing. So
it makes sense. From their theories, Lestrade has everything to gain and literally nothing to lose. And so it makes sense that he becomes the suspect here.
They bring up that. So if Sky went independent, then that would disrupt, like, the shipping lane. Because they're in, like, the Terran corridor. Hans would be forced to move his ships through a non-allied nation at this point. He would have to open the old, like, a shipping agreement. This would most likely spark conflict within the Lyran Commonwealth, right? Katrina's popularity would plummet, okay? It is at this point Frederick Steiner would step in acting as Lestrade's man on Tharkad, right?
Well, I think this theory is fairly sound up until the point that we put Hans Davion in the in the equation, and I think Hans would just subdue the Isle of Skye, honestly.
Yeah, but it would be hard for him because he's fighting that war, right?
Right. It would be hard for him. And it does make mention that civil wars are unpopular. More on that in a few years.
It's a sound theory. Morgan buys it. I mean, he's like, what do you think? So it is at this point that Morgan declares his intent to take the hounds to Summer and tear Lestrade's castle down, right? They're going to ride. They're going to go kill this man. I mean, seriously, Morgan's like, we're going to go murder Lestrade right now. Huh? I mean, I was like, yeah, dude.
I can imagine that the feelings are pretty strong once they figured this out. They have a direction for their anger, right?
I want this alternate timeline where, like, the Kellhounds land on Summer and, like, assault the Lestrade estate and, like, burn it down.
It's just like a full-on coup.
Be fun scenario.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen, though, because amidst a chorus of agreement, Clovis stands up and demands that they not do this.
Which is, that's wild considering what the man's just been through.
Yeah. Well, it's because he demands the right to slay Lestrade himself, right?
Oh.
He's like, no, okay. I want to do it. And so this is where Clovis tells, like, his little backstory here about how his mother, at one point, she worked as a servant for Lestrade, and about how he got her pregnant and she had to flee his employment. She, like, fled the castle and joined Heimdall. And growing up, his mother would tell him stories of his father and that he was a bold mech warrior. But eventually, his mother revealed to Clovis that his father was actually Aldo Lestrade.
What a curveball, this one.
Yes, yes, yes. This is Clovis is Lestrade's son. That's true.
Isn't his bastard nuts? Son.
Yes.
Definitely didn't see it coming. Like, I was caught completely unaware of it. Because you did make mention when we first met Clovis, you said, remember that he mentioned his dad, but he didn't really mention any specifics.
Did I say that?
Yeah, and I thought about it ever since you said that. I was like, who could it be? I never put Lestrade on that board of possibles there for me.
What a twist. Shocking. I love this. So Lestrade is his father. And so Clovis wants to be the one to kill him. He's like, it should be me, right?
We learn a whole history of why. Because of Clovis's stature, he had a hard time throughout his life. And he created this story that his dad was just, he knew his dad was a powerful man. And he believed all this time that his father would come and destroy his enemies for him. And
great warrior.
Be a dad. It never came, right? He never showed up, and finally Clovis had to come to grips with the reality that his father doesn't give a shit about him. His thesis is, that gives me more of a reason to kill him than any of you guys. He ends with a quote, "Warriors kill warriors, Lestrades kill Lestrades. Leave him to me."
Leave me. Yes. Lestrades kill Lestrades. I love this.
I love that line.
Yeah. It's cool.
He's taking one out of
his right.
Justin's book, He's getting a little dramatic.
Aldo Lestrade murdered, allegedly orchestrated the deaths of a bunch of his family members so that he could take the throne. It's a family tradition, is kind of Clovis's argument here. He's like, it's just what we do. It's like Lestrade stuff. He sold me. I'm like, yeah, man, let him do it. Give this one to Clovis.
Also, eat your heart out, Game of Thrones. BattleTech did it first.
That's it, though. It's over, dude. We're going to kill Lestrade. We're going to kill him. Yes, yes. You're always like, what are we going to do with this guy? And you're like, Clovis is going to go murder Lestrade. Or he's going to try, at least. Wonderful.
And the Kellhounds are once again diverted away from Yorinaga.
Yeah, and they missed their appointment again. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe. Their whole thing was like, we're definitely not going to miss this. They were so like, it's so important that we not miss. And then they do. I didn't anticipate. I thought for sure they would meet on ride.
I felt bad for Yorinaga here. Because I was like, he's going to be standing real sad.
Yeah. He's going to be so sad. That's totally.
Like a kid with all his toys laid out waiting for his buddy to come over.
Yeah, he's ready for a slumber party here, and it's not happening.
You hate to see it.
Aldo Lestrade just ruins everyone's days.
He's got a name. I apologize to any Aldo Lestrades out there. Maybe you're pretty cool. I don't know. But the name feels, I feel like it goes with, it like suits him.
Yeah, it's definitely like a pompous villain name.
Yeah.
We should call it Enrico while you're at it.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Enrico.
Yeah, I thought he like disappears from the story. Well, that's right. Yeah, Enrico went to Zaniah to try to convince Brother Giles to come back. Giles was like, nah. That's the last we heard about Enrico. That's true. He tried to do the Dan thing, but like he was like, no, dude. And that was it. He disappeared from the story, never to hear from again.
Sounds like a ripe potential shrapnel story.
It's popping off though, right? The stakes have been raised.
It's definitely picked up very quickly. As soon as we started the second book, we've kind of exited the recap information that we got through the first part. And as soon as we started the second part, we're right into drawing new lines, new threads.
Dude, it is though. Just this last little chunk, we got the Bethel raid and the Battle of New Freedom. And all this like back to back, you're like, oh man, it is. It's your man part two. Part two is popping off, dude. Part, you know, book two, Deception. I'm excited.
Me too. But we'll have to see where things go from here. We come back next week to continue on Warrior Coupe.
This was another episode of Mechs and Men. I am Kanan Hill, joined as usual by my two good friends, Brent and Aaron. We would like to thank the author, Michael A. Stackpole, and of course all the other writers and artists who work so hard to keep BattleTech alive. We would like to thank Catalyst Game Labs for being such generous stewards of the property. We have an email, advice@heat.management. If you have any questions, corrections, suggestions, please, advice@heat.management. We're also on social media, Twitter, Instagram, @ofmexandmen.
You can also find us on the Valhalla Club Discord. You'll often find us on some Friday nights playing Mech Warrior with the other podcasters. We also have a booth there where you can come hang out, and it's probably the best way to directly interface with us.
Also, if you have the time, feel free to leave us a review. We will return next week to continue our discussion of Warrior Coupe by Michael A. Stackpole. Until then.
Until next time.
Selah.